So I'm from Brazil, and there is an intellectual in Brazil, José Miguel Wisnik, and he used to say that the difference between Brazilians and Americans in music is that Americans are really professional and in the stage, and Brazilians like to create an ambient of intimacy. So this is what I'm trying to do. I speak very, in a very informal way, okay?
Gabriel Improt est un guitariste quand même qui a une certaine expérience, même beaucoup d'expérience en tant qu'accompagnateur de grands musiciens comme Egbert Ujichmund. Il a collaboré avec Jean Donat, ou avec Caetano Veloso, ou avec Carlinhos Brown, enfin des très grands noms de la musique brésilienne. Et à partir d'un moment, il a commencé à s'intéresser aux sciences sociales, au point de faire un doctorat en sociologie et anthropologie qu'il a soutenu en 2015 sur le samba jazz, sur le mouvement de la samba jazz dans les années 50, à la fin des années 50, qui est un mouvement de modernisation de la musique brésilienne, simultané à la bossa nova, mais qui va se différencier, être un peu concurrent. Et être peut-être la variante noire de la samba, de la bossa nova, si on peut dire ça. Et on va essayer d'associer un petit peu ses compétences en musicologie, puisqu'il a une formation complète de composition et de guitariste populaire, qui est une discipline au Brésil, qui est particulière, et également en sociologie, sur un terrain où on a l'occasion de collaborer. Et on développera d'ailleurs cette collaboration demain. Et là, aujourd'hui, lui va marier tout seul la sociologie et la musicologie dans un petit parcours sur la guitare brésilienne, qui est pris comme un des ingrédients du typique brésilien dans l'histoire de l'industrie culturelle brésilienne. Voilà.
Okay, I will start with The Sad End of Policarpo Quaresma, which is a romance novel, actually, in Portuguese it's romance, a novel from the beginning of the 20th century, which is very, it reveals a lot about the Brazil and the position, the social position of the guitar, the place of the guitar in the society. Policarpo Quaresma is a character of the romance, is the main character, and he's a guy from the top of the society. He's from the elites, he's an important military, and he's obsessed with Brazilian nationality. He's very nationalist, and he starts to write official documents in Indian language because he thinks it's the basis of the Brazilian nationality. So he's in trouble because of that, and this is why he had a sad end. He's an idealist guy. Wants to back to the Indians before the Portuguese, and then in the first chapter of the novel, he's trying to learn how to play guitar, because he thinks as the Indian language, guitar is the instrument of the nationalities. Is where the Brazilian, not just the Brazilian music is, but the Brazilian culture. So he hires a guy from the people, a black guy, a poor guy, which is a guitar player. And this guy, as all guitar players, they were very they were not very well seen for these people from elite. They were considered like cheaters or something like that. They are marginals. They are in the margin of the society. And the neighborhood in this passage you can read here. The neighborhood is not don't like that. They think the guy's crazy because he's putting a poor guitar player inside his room, his house, and they are looking through the windows, and they are seeing that Policarpo is trying to learn guitar. So This tells a lot about the position, as I said, about the position of the guitar in the society. It was an instrument of low class people, and Brazil is characterized for being the last country in the Americas to finish the slavery. So in 1911, it was finished 20 years before. So it was a big problem in Brazil, not just because of the condition of the slavery, but also because the majority of the population was under slavery. So it was a big problem in Brazil how to absorb all that people. And it also it this problem is also connected with the problem of the nationality, how to communicate what is Brazil. Maybe it's the same problem I have here. So it's a very big country, bigger than Western Europe. So with many cultures, many people inside it. And how to resume that, to create a Brazilian nationality, to create a country. How can you say what Brazil is? So the high classes, the elites, the intellectuals, they are faced with this problem. And Gilberto Freire, who knows people who knows Brazilian culture, knows that Gilberto Freire was very important in that process, the modernists. But I'll not go further on that. Let's start the presentation. So here you have the structure of the presentation. I divided the 20th century in four big phases, relating the cultural industry, and I pick up one guitar player to represent all guitar players of that period, and the first period goes from 1930, and is when the first records start to be realized, and João Pernambuco is the guitar player. And I will also talk about Heitor Villa-Lobos. Then from 1930, from 1950, you have the radio era with the Rádio Nacional. From 1950s to 1980s, we have the albums, hi-fi, and the television. And then from 80s, from 2000s, we have the CD and the digital era.
Peut-être qu'il faut préciser ce que tu ne mentionnes pas là, avant de partir plus loin, c'est que donc on a des périodes qui sont divisées par les techniques, hein, c'est des configurations sociotechniques, mais à côté de ça correspondent des moments particuliers dans l'histoire de la musique qui se figent là-dessus. C'est-à-dire que la première partie, avec les premiers enregistrements, on a une fixation de l'idée de genre, et de genre musicaux typiques, puisque l'idée de genre n'est pas quelque chose d'objectif avant ça. Après, la deuxième, c'est un moment particulier avec la radio, c'est un point centralisé pendant un régime autoritaire, où on centralise donc l'exaltation du Brésil en chœur. Il y a une forme particulière de musique qui met en scène cette unité. Et puis après, on a une diversification, c'est-à-dire dans le national, il y a divers concurrents finalement au sein du disque. Il y a une certaine diversification des propositions nationalistes. Et puis la dernière partie, c'est où la guitare brésilienne devient effectivement un patrimoine et un objet d'érudition bien spécifique, voilà, au même niveau que d'autres objets d'érudition musicale.
And this is why we are here with a guitar player from Brazil.
Voilà, c'est pour ça qu'on se retrouve avec à parler de musique dans un amphithéâtre avec finalement des dispositifs théoriques et musicologiques un peu composites.
So the first part, I choose João Pernambuco to represent the guitar player in that period, and the Brazilian guitar. João Pernambuco is a guy from northeast of Brazil, from Petrolândia. It's a new name. It has another name when he was born. I don't remember now. And he was the first guy to record a solo song in the guitar. We have many written music from the 19th century for guitar, but almost nothing for solo guitar. So we can say the tradition of Brazilian solo guitar starts with recordings. It starts with the cultural industry of recordings, because Casa Edison recorded João Pernambuco and also Canhoto, which is another important guitar player, in 1911, 1912. So I'll play a song for you by João Pernambuco. It's called Graúna. There is a controversy about the rhythm. Some people say it's a maxixe, or some people say it's a lundu, which is more from 19th century, and I will play for you. So this rhythm here, it has a basic of three accents, three articulations, which is ta ta ta, ta. It's called tresillo. For the Cuban musicologists, they classified basic rhythms in Latin America, and it's very common. It's also in the tango, in the baião, and in the Middle East. It's a basic form of accompaniment. It's a basic pattern for rhythms. And in the beginning of the Brazilian tradition, in the beginning of the 20th century and in the 19th century also, it was really everywhere in Brazilian music. So ta 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 ta. And it's the origin of the samba also. The samba, it's the main Brazilian rhythm, as you may know, and the samba is like the tango for Argentina or the jazz for United States. It's the main rhythm, and samba came from that.
Fala do Capadócio.
Capadócio. Ah, here you have, yeah, I'll talk later about the Capadócio, but here you can see the first. I can point here, like right here.
Yeah.
So the Capadócio means cheater in English, trompeur.
Trompeur
in French. Yeah, it's this guy who plays guitar and also he can also be called as malandro. And he's not a completely wrong guy. He does some wrong things. The malandro is a central figure in the social sciences in Brazil. Many intellectuals say that the malandro resumes the Brazilian character, which is a guy who is confronted with he's a worker or a people from low class, which is confronted with a very strong rule from elite or from his seu patrão, from his boss, and so his boss demands a lot of him. So he has to, in order to survive, he has to do some things that your boss would consider wrong. So his boss said, "You can't do that." But it's hard to don't do that because so he crossed the line between the wrong and the right. So in the traffic, he goes on the red sign.
En fait, ce qui est important là-dedans, c'est la figure du Cappadocio. C'est ce qui va préfigurer donc le malandro, qui est une espèce d'archétype du caractère brésilien, donc qui joue sur les règles, connaît très bien les règles et il joue d'elles toujours. Mais c'est aussi un personnage populaire qui est lié des fois donc au travail des bras souvent, mais aussi à la prostitution quand on prend le couple dans l'Umbanda.
Capoeira,
et qui pratique aussi la capoeira. C'est pour ça qu'il y a cette image là d'un art populaire aussi.
And he may use a knife. There are many characterizations, right?
Okay. C'est une figure centrale de la samba. Quand on chante la samba,
Y a le malandro. But he's also a seductor. He's not just a bad guy who goes with a knife, but he also plays guitar and sings songs and
very stylish guy.
Very stylish, drinks, I don't know, something like that. Okay, here's a quotation from very spread quotation from Simon Frith, and just to support my idea that the Brazilian guitar starts with the first recording of a Brazilian guitar by Casa Edson. So 20th century popular music means the 20th century popular record. So if you think in the song, in the 3 minutes of the song, which is nobody thinks about that. Every song has between 3 and 4 minutes in the radio. And it's because of the limitations of the first recordings. And if you think on the concept of album, is also a concept of the industry of recording. So I think this is an important thing to remember.
Je pense que ce qui est important en fait dans cette citation là, c'est de dépasser un peu l'essentialisation où souvent on pense en termes folkloristes, l'idée que on fixe en enregistrant la musique, on fixe quelque chose qui existe déjà avant, qui est la culture authentique populaire, et qu'on passe juste au disque comme si cet acte était neutre. Et en fait, ce sur quoi il insiste là, c'est que donc c'est pas seulement l'enregistrement de quelque chose qui existerait indépendamment du disque, c'est que c'est le disque qui produit ça, et notamment la fixation des caractéristiques musicales associées à des genres, alors que les choses sont très molles. Le mot samba, ça désigne pas du tout de la musique au départ. Ça désigne, enfin au départ, dans les années 1900, ça désigne un type de fête où on joue tout type de musique. Un type de fête bien situé socialement, etc., avec toute une série de connotations, mais ce ne sont pas des caractéristiques musicales qui sont associées à ça.
Yeah, Fritz is arguing with rock and roll lovers because he was a rock and roll critic, and he's arguing against the naive idea that you have a song from the people, and then the capitalists from industry comes and took it and commercialized it. It's not like that. It's a process that goes within the industry. The creation of popular music is the creation of the cultural industry of popular music.
Et un point important qu'on commentait avant et qui me semble très important à comprendre dans le cas du Brésil, c'est que on a énormément d'autres choses que la musique de disque. C'est-à-dire que les pratiques musicales non liées à la radio ou au disque sont très proches, c'est-à-dire des réunions de rue ou chez les gens où on joue de la musique ou des pratiques du monde rural, etc., qui sont relativement indépendantes du disque ou différentes en tout cas du folklore, des rites sociaux, etc. Ça a une grande importance qui a beaucoup moins ici en France. Donc voilà, c'est aussi donc c'est pas quelque chose qui existerait indépendamment, parce que dans le cas du Brésil, il y a aussi des choses qui existent indépendamment de ça. Voilà.
Mais ça va. Thanks. Ah. Okay. Here we have Heitor Villa-Lobos. Heitor Villa-Lobos is like the main classical composer in Brazil. I don't know, maybe he could be compared to Claude Debussy in France, but it's more because he was really important in Brazil. And he also came to Paris and did his consagration here in the 20s. It was important for him in Brazil, have been here in Paris twice or three, I think three times in between 1920 and 1930. And he added his music in France. But in his youth, he was very tied to choro music, to music from Malandros and Capadócios. And there are many important people from choro said that he was really there since he was 16, playing guitar with people in the streets, and so he knew the choro very well, and he knew João Pernambuco, and he put his music on chart, but not edited. He just wrote that for people from his circle. But I would like to play the Prelude number 2, which he wrote in 1940. And it's very close to choro and to João Pernambuco's music. I'll play just a part of that because it's big and it has two parts. And the second part is a rock and roll piece. So I'll not play that. It's too complicated. I'll play just the first part and then the beginning of the second part. Excuse me, I'm not a classical guitar player, and it's a classical piece, but I'll try to play here just to show for you how is that. What is important here, I'll jump the modinha and then I'll back to the modinha. What is important here that I would like to show for you, it's not just the similarity of the first part with the choro culture. It's a choro, of course, it's a choro song. But in the second part, which I just started, we have a kind of procedure which is very characteristic from João Pernambuco, and it was kind of new. I will say that. I'm not sure, but I think it was not being used very much, which is a procedure to use an open string in the top, and then the chords are come in fixed positions going down, something like that. So João Pernambuco did that a lot. Here you can see you have a open string on the top, and then you have a chord here, that goes down. So the open string, it changes its characteristics when you change the chord, of course. So. So João Pernambuco did that, and then Villa-Lobos took this procedure and exaggerated that, used that a lot. So in the Estudo Número 1, he does that for, I don't know how many chords, 12 chords, something like that. The E, open E, over diminished chords. So goes down and goes down and goes down. And also in the second part of the prelude that which I played, he does the same. There is a rock and roll chord here. And here he does with two open strings on the top then. So he's doing here a procedure that in counterpoint, I don't want to bore you with hard musicology, but I think it's interesting. So I'll try to show that for you. So here, what Villa-Lobos is doing in João Pernambuco is an oblique movement. So in counterpoint, you have three kinds of movement. The parallel movement, so if you have two voices, they are moving together. If the first voice goes up, the second does the same. You can have the opposite movement, so one voice goes down, the other goes up, or vice versa. And you have the oblique movement, which is this kind of movement that Villa-Lobos is doing here. I took that from internet, but I think it's very good. This is why I took. So the third oblique movement here, this one, is what Villa-Lobos is doing. The top voice is stopped, and the second voice, which are the chords, goes down. Mário de Andrade is an important intellectual modernist who wrote many, many books and texts about music. And he has a book, Música Doce Música, Music Sweet Music. And there is a text about the musical expression in the United States. So he's comparing in 1930s, the music in the United States and music in Brazil. And he's saying it's very different. And he's saying it's different mainly because the beginning of that difference is in the religion. It's kind of Weberian theory. I don't know if he was reading Weber or not, but he said United music from United States came from the Protestant tradition, and in Germany of Lutero and after Bach, they used to do a kind of counterpoint. Which was very simple. The voices were simple voices for the people come to the church and sing the song. So it's not a complicated counterpoint. Mário de Andrade say it's quasi chordal. It's almost a chordal counterpoint. So who understand a little about music, will understand that. So when you have a very simple lines, superimposed lines of voices, when you look for this direction, you can see chords on that, right? So the voices goes forming chords, parallel chords, because this guy is singing, let's say, do, re, mi, and the other, do, si, la, but they are moving together. So when you look for the two voices together, you see a chord. So the tradition, the North American tradition of chord, came from that tradition, from simple lines for simple people to sing in the church. And he's opposing that to the Catholic counterpoint from Palestrina, which is a counterpoint very complicated, with very complicated lines for professional musicians to play in the court, in the high places of the society. So in Brazil, so it becomes very complicated for simple people to sing that. So people simply don't sing in together. So he's saying, we are not collective, actually. He's saying that. Americans are much more collective in art, in song, and Brazilians, they like the singer that, which is very charismatic, who can sing alone, like the football player who does the goal alone. He doesn't need it, like Pelé or maybe Maradona. They don't need the other player. They just took the ball and the guy is a genius and
donc
he
en,
alone.
En musique, comment football, individualisme du côté brésilien et jeu d'équipe.
Same type de individualisme. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oui. So musically in counterpoint, it's translated for these movements. You can think. I'm trying to connect musical concepts and sociological concepts, like Mário de Andrade did. So in music, if you have the parallel movement characterizes the jazz music. And so in the jazz, who knows musicology, it's a very common concept. I'm not inventing that, but people say that you have chords that they go in block together, like Duke Ellington. If you study orchestration, jazz orchestration, you see that you have blocks of chords. In the Brazilian tradition, in the choro, you have very complicated counterpoints. So choro is taught as like a Baroque music because you have the main line can be played by a flute or a mandolin, but with many details in the interpretation. And then you have a bass line on the seven strings guitar, which is completely different and does a different movement. So we can say it's the opposite movement, the contraire, mouvement contraire. Mm-hmm. The choro is more like mouvement contraire, and jazz, and you can say Debussy. I put there Debussy because Debussy started that. Debussy, Ravel, and impressionist music. They start to do chords, maybe to oppose to Wagner, to counterpoints from Wagner and the German tradition, which is very contrapuntal. So Debussy, very nationalist, maybe started to do block chords. And you can think block chords are North American, are Protestant, and opposite movements, counterpoint opposite movements are Catholic. You can think on that. And here what you have in João Pernambuco is you can think as a compromise between those kinds of movement, which is the oblique movement, when one voice stays like a rule in the top, and then the other voice goes moving. But you can think when the other voice is moving, the first voice also moves because moves the relation between them. Oh, before that, I will play a song for you that I jumped, which is Modinha by Tom Jobim. Modinha is a style from 19th century. Jobim is a guy from 20th century. And he did this song, Think on Modinha, on 19th century. So it's a beautiful song. Thank you. So here we're back to the musicology, to the ethnomusicology now with Carlo Sandroni. So Carlo Sandroni is talking about the Tresillo, which I talked about before. And here I would like to present an idea from Sandroni, which is the idea that the black culture in Brazil was kind of repressed in the society in the 19th century because the heritage of the slavery. And then it goes gradually arising. It goes from the it grows from top from of the cultural industry and the society. So the Tresillo is the rhythm of the songs of the beginning of cultural industry. So it's as I said, it's a very simple rhythm. It's almost universal, but it's essentially different from the basic patterns from Europe. So in Europe, in European music, you have a regular rhythm as a basis. So if you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, you are thinking on that. 1, so it's a very regular rhythm. Then in Brazilian music or music from Middle East, you have not a pattern like that, but the pattern is unequal. So you have 3-3-2 articulation. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, kind of regular. But then in the Turris, and then you can read Hermano Viana, O Mistério do Samba, and there you can see how the samba arises in the Turris. It's a different rhythm. So here I took a musicologist, Mukuna, and Mukuna is saying the samba came from a rhythm from Central Africa. Oh, I don't know if he's right or wrong, but I'm sure it's close. I don't know if it came exactly from there, like, because a rhythm is not like a plant or a person that you can say it was born there and came here. But it's very similar, and he's writing saying it's similar. So I put here what Mukuna wrote from Central Africa, which is ta 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 ka 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 ta. So it's an impaired rhythm. You have a seven, and then you have a nine. So rhythms like that are more complicated than regular rhythms that you can divide in the middle. This rhythm you can divide like eight and eight. It's seven and nine. And the samba is like that. He put a samba here that we in Rio de Janeiro call this samba samba de Paulista. It's a samba from São Paulo. It's considered not so genuine. Not because it starts on the top. So in Rio, he starts samba on the upbeat, and here he starts on the first time. But he wrote ta 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 da. Cat, cat, cadac. In Rio, we maybe would do more like. Which is the same stuff inverted. But the idea is, the main idea is that the samba is more complicated than the tresillo. And it's more close to African rhythms, which are really more complicated than the European basic rhythms. So the idea of Sandrone is that the black culture is repressed in the society, and then it gradually arises. It gradually came from the tresillo and the maxixe for the samba, which is more African.
And chaque version de la samba est plus africaine progressivement. C'est plus réprimé au début à travers la marche et tout ça. Mm-hmm. Et progressivement, ça s'affirme comme plus africain. C'est ça.
C'est ça. C'est ça. And also the percussion started to be recorded for the by the cultural industry in the 30s. Before the 30s, they didn't record instruments of percussion. They just record the others, noble instruments. So Sandroni also wrote about that in an article about Napavuna, which is a song in Turris, which has the first recordings of percussion in Brazilian music. The second period is the period of the radio. In Brazil, some people like José Roberto Zan called that the populist period of cultural industry, because Radio Nacional, Radio Nacional, was a radio which was the state was behind it. They statized it in 1940, right? Yeah. So yeah, Radio Nacional was central in Brazil. Brazil is a big country, so it was a way to the government to talk with all this big country, and was like a unique channel. There was not another radio competing. It was like the main radio. Everybody was there. So it was in Rio de Janeiro, which was the capital of Brazil. And Garoto is a very important guitar player from that period. He was not just a guitar player. He played many instruments like mandolin. He invented an instrument, a guitarra tenor. Tenor guitar, it's a big mandolin with simple strings. He played also banjo. And he was a genius. He was a composer and a very good instrumentist.
Un petit détail très important sur la radio nationale dont il a parlé, là, donc il centralisait et pour la première fois diffusait des messages sur tout le territoire, c'est que ce n'était pas une radio qui passait des disques comme aujourd'hui. C'était un producteur culturel. C'est-à-dire que les artistes étaient engagés pour jouer constamment, donc il y avait les orchestres qui étaient entretenus, et donc c'était un lieu de création aussi, d'arrangement, de rencontre, c'était un monde artistique en soi, quoi.
Ok. And here I quote Renato Ortiz, just to say that Radio Nacional was not really professionalized, really, because people have many functions on there, and so people was not really living from that. Musicians, they had another way to make money. They was not just. They people from Choro normally were employee of the state. Okay, and here you have a picture of Radamés Inátegui, which was an important maestro. Let's go ahead. So now I'm going to show you Lamentos no Morro. It's a very famous song by Garoto, and it's an interesting song because he starts with a batucada. It's called Lamentos do Morro. How can you translate that? It's
lamentation de favelas, quoi, parce que les morros, c'est les mornes, c'est là où on trouve les favelas.
C'est les favelas.
Lamentation des favelas.
Oui.
Qui incarne les quartiers populaires à Rio.
Yes. So Garoto is trying to put his music to find the basis of Brazilian music, and he's like saying the basis is the music from favelas, from the poor people, and is the batucada from the favela. So he starts a song trying to emulate a batucada in the guitar. So he does a stuff like that. It's very rhythm, just repeated notes, and the focus is on the rhythm. And then he develops to another kind of rhythm, which is more like it has a North American influence, because it has block chords like in the jazz. So you can see these blocks. It's like trumpets and saxophones over the rhythm of the favela that he established. And this is the introduction. And when he goes to part A, he does something like a voice singing that you can think is a voice of the Brazilian people. It's a kind of samba exaltação. It's a samba which tries to
oui, y a, à ce moment-là, il y a un courant, une variante de la samba qui est créée justement à la Radio Nationale, c'est le sous-genre samba exaltação. Mm-hmm. Et c'est un peu des hymnes, et c'est très porté par les voix et qui sont faits pour être chantés par tout le monde en même temps. Yeah. Avec donc cette idée de communion nationale à travers.
Yeah, which is, I'll play just a part. So this is the beginning of the part A. It does that on the tenor voice, because I have four voices here. He does that on the tenor. We have a bass, and then in the top he keeps the batucada, but now it's the samba batucada, more complex. So the accompaniment rhythm would be something like that. So he does. I think I played the entire song for you. We don't have so much time, but it's an interesting song, so I'll play from top. As we wrote, I'm playing a transcription of his recording.
Juste préciser sur cette partie samba exaltação, puisqu'on va vite tourner la page, que c'est un genre qui est devenu très important, et c'est là où c'est devenu emblématique du Brésil à l'étranger aussi. C'est au moment où Carmen Miranda aussi va à l'étranger.
Ari Barroso.
Alors, la chanson d'Ari Barroso qui a fondé ce genre-là, qui l'a rendu connu, c'est
Brasil, Brasil, meu Brasil, brasileiro.
Que vous connaissez tous, notamment à cause du film Brasil. C'est ce thème qui revient constamment et où en fait on reprend la batucada que lui fait, il le reprend dans les sections de cuivre. Donc on utilise en fait des cuivres utilisés un peu à l'américaine, mm-hmm. mais sur un pattern très clairement percussif, mm-hmm. transposé par Adamej Niatali au cuivre.
Thank you.
Et voilà, c'est l'idée d'une chanson officielle, arrangé, symphonique, donc c'est de la samba qui vient des quartiers les plus populaires, mais qui est vraiment stylisé avec les ressources les plus légitimes du chant international, symphonique, jazz, etc.
Ok. So here we arrived in the third phases, and here things are changing. So Radio Nacional is in crisis. There are some relates. Many people came to there, like the funds start to arise, And then after that came Beatles, and then the musicians become to make money with music. So the middle class start to give musicians for the Brazilian music. And I choose Baden Powell to represent these phases. Here we have Samba in Hi-Fi. It's a cover from 1957. It's Turma da Gafieira. Here we have the junction of the technology. So high fidelity was arising. It was new. And it's maybe the first record in high fidelity, Brazilian record. And here we have the new samba, the modern samba, which became more famous with Bossa Nova. But also the samba jazz is another movement. It's very tired. In the beginning was the same as Bossa Nova, but later it became separated because Bossa Nova was considered more light, maybe more white and then the samba jazz was stronger, was more extroverted. Yeah, thanks.
Mais ce qui est important dans ce qu'il a dit là, c'est qu'on a un changement d'économie, c'est-à-dire que tout le monde de l'art qui était soutenu par la radio auparavant, où étaient les artistes sous contrat, commence à se désagréger à partir du début des années 50. Et arrivent donc les maisons de disques avec la télévision. Donc le disque existe depuis le début des années 1900, mm-hmm. mais ne constitue pas une économie, un monde de l'art. Mm-hmm. Or, c'est bien à partir des années 50 et le long play, coordonné à la télévision qui apparaît au milieu des années 50, qu'il y a un renouvellement générationnel. Donc très rares sont ceux qui arrivent à passer de la radio à la télévision. Mm-hmm. Et on a donc des nouvelles générations et qui... veulent démontrer la modernité, l'universalité de la musique brésilienne et de la samba en particulier. Et donc, on va avoir des propositions concurrentes de modernisation avec les 7 exemples donc de la mm-hmm. bossa nova contre le samba jazz, dont on parle d'ailleurs demain.
Ok. So, I'll show for you two examples of bossa nova. Bossa Nova is a new synthesis of samba in a new era of Brazil and the Occidental world. And João Gilberto is a main guy in Bossa Nova because he did a kind of synthesis of that rhythm. So it was common in Brazil. I'll advance here and then I'm back. It was here. I'm showing Brasília. So Brasília is from the same period. It was an optimist period for Brazil. Seems for Brazilians that Brazil would advance 50 years in 5, and as the president Juscelino Kubitschek said, and then they did a new capital with a new architecture. Which is the architecture of Oscar Niemeyer and the urbanism of Lúcio Costa. And you can it's a cover here, the first image is a cover for a CD, for LP, an album by Tom Jobim and Vinícius de Moraes. They did that for Brasília, for the inauguration of Brasília's Sinfonia da Alvorada. But there you can see the designs of by Oscar Niemeyer, which are very simple, with simple forms. And João Gilberto did the same with samba. Samba was very complicated, as I showed for you with Mucuna. And then João Gilberto did a kind of synthesis of that, which was also in the Poesia Concreta by Campos Brothers and Décio Pignatari. Here you have luxo, lixo, garbage, and luxury. So,
et ce qui est important de comprendre là dans ce qu'il présente, c'est que la musique populaire du disque prétend dialoguer non plus seulement avec la musique savante, orchestrale, etc., mais avec la musique d'avant-garde et avec même en dehors du monde musical, donc la poésie d'avant-garde, la poésie concrète, l'architecture d'avant-garde, le cinéma nouveau qui venait d'être consacré donc avec en 59 Orfeo mm-hmm. Nero qui est consacré à Cannes, etc. Donc il y a un mouvement d'euphorie brésilienne, qui n'est pas seulement économique, aussi politique partiellement, et enfin, la musique populaire qui dialogue d'égal à égal avec les choses les plus consacrées, les plus pointues, les plus académiques.
Yeah, I think Brazil is unique on that. If you took Tom Jobim, I think in the 70s or 60s, he was Garota de Ipanema, Girl from Ipanema, by Jobim. You probably know. Tá. Olha que coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça, ela menina que... This kind of song, this song became the second most recorded song in the world. The first one was a song by Beatles. The second one was Garota de Ipanema. When they asked Jobim about that, how you feel you are the second guy most played in the world, you just lose for Beatles. And then Jobim said, yeah, but they were four. So it's unique. I don't think it happened in another part of the world. At the same time, you have very popular culture, but it was also very high level. Like Garota de Ipanema, in the second part, has a modulation, which is it's considered the most complicated one. When I studied guitar in United States, in California, and then the guitar book, the last chapter of the last book was Garota de Ipanema because of the modulation for the second part. Because you are in F, and then you go to F sharp, which is completely unnatural. You can't find that in popular song. You find that in advanced classical music. But Jobim did that naturally. So you are... Olha que coisa mais linda, cheia de graça, ela menina... Ah, porque estou tão sozinho. And then another modulation. And another one. So it's advanced harmonically, and it was the second most recorded song in the world. So it's interesting about Brazil. And then Caetano Veloso did the Tropicália and Gilberto Gil, and also the same characteristics, very advanced in poetry, in harmony, and very popular at the same time.
Ce qui est intéressant, en fait, je me rends compte au fur et à mesure qu'on avance, c'est que le terme populaire est vraiment extrêmement connoté. Au début de ton exposé, on en était encore à penser à transposer le folklore, les pratiques du peuple. Avec la Radio Nationale, c'est plutôt la culture de masse pour le peuple. Donc, ce n'est pas ce qui vient du peuple, mais ce qui va vers le peuple de façon centralisée. Et là, on est dans la pop culture, quoi, finalement. C'est-à-dire une réflexion, une posture réflexive sur ce que c'est qu'un produit culturel industrialisé, comment est-ce que la conscience et la critique se manifestent dans un univers comme ça. Parce que là, par exemple, vous avez... donc, on parlait tout à l'heure de Radamés Niatal et tout ça. Ce sont des gens qui ont travaillé notamment sur des financements à la Radio Nationale, de Coca-Cola, au moment où ils se sont... un des programmes les plus innovateurs était financé par Coca-Cola, au moment de son lancement au Brésil. Et là, donc, quelques années plus tard, on a cette poésie concrète, donc, qui est de la poésie de la circulation restreinte, hein, très, très avancée, vraiment pour les gens qui sont de ce monde-là. Et là, c'est « Buvez Coca-Cola », donc le slogan « Bavez de la colle »,« Buvez de la coca »,« Bavez de la colle poubelle », poubelle ou morceau de verre, hein, on ne sait pas, en tout cas c'est pas bon, de la colle, cloaque, voilà. Et c'est Décio Pignatari qui est un des grands poètes donc, qui travaille sur la forme, y compris de la poésie, en dialogue avec le langage publicitaire.
Voilà. It's a very visual kind of poetry. They were very advanced also in that. They started to do visual poetry before everybody.
Et celui-ci, pareil, un autre, c'est en fait le mot lixo, qui veut dire poubelle, écrit à partir de luxo, qui est le luxe. Donc avec plein de luxe, en fait, ce n'est que de la poubelle. Il y a toute une série de jeux comme ça. Voilà.
So, now I'm going to play a song by Baden Powell, since I choose him to represent this period. But I'll do that, it will come from a music from Egberto Gismonti. So I'll first play Salvador from Egberto Gismonti, which is really influenced by Baden Powell. And then after I play a part of consolação together. Ah, here is important to say that the Afro sambas are an idea by, you can say, by Vinicius de Moraes. Vinicius de Moraes, in 1956, did Orfeu Negro, Orfeu Noir, which became a movie by Marcel Camus, which won the Palma de Ouro.
Marcel Camus, Palme d'Or, Palme d'Or in Cannes.
Palme d'Or in Cannes, and then became very popular. Even Obama said in his biography that his mother took him to go to the scene to see this movie, and then and he found the movie very boring. I have to confess, I also think this movie is boring. But she was crying when he looked at her. She was crying. And then he asked her, why are you so moved with this movie? And then she said, I saw this movie when I was a teenager. She was a white girl who married with a guy from Africa, and then Obama was born. So you may think that Vinicius de Moraes is the grandfather of Obama. Okay. Let me tune it.
Profite pour préciser que Orfeo Negro, donc c'est ce que tu me racontais hier, c'est c'est lors de ses études aux États-Unis, enfin je sais pas, peu importe, mais en fait il plaque donc la tragédie grecque la plus classique, hein, donc d'Orphée, sur une réalité contemporaine, des drames et des tragédies des modes de vie des classes les plus pauvres au Brésil. Et donc c'est une façon de transcender, de rendre universelle finalement une situation très particulière, et de faire accéder la culture populaire brésilienne à cet universel qui correspond précisément au moment où la musique brésilienne devient un produit international, de consommation internationale. C'est à ce moment précis qu'on a ce succès à Cannes, mais aussi où on a des dizaines et des dizaines d'artistes qui quittent le pays, le Brésil, pour s'installer aux États-Unis ou en Europe.
Mm-hmm. Ok, Salvador, Gilberto Gismonti. Thank you. So I think it's important here to back there to the Sandroni's idea and say here it's one step more to the penetration of black music in Brazilian music. And then here it's really I think it's really black Brazilian music, Afro-Brazilian music. And then it's when we can say that Baden-Powell does the Oswald de Andrade ideas of exportation music, right? So, yeah, she was saying for me that she wrote about Oswald de Andrade, which is another modernist intellectual from the 20s. And Oswald de Andrade said, we have to absorb the foreign culture as the Indians does with the invasion. They eat them, but they eat not because they hate them, but because they admire them. And so we have to eat the foreign culture and absorb that. And this is the way that we are going to export music and not import. And we are going to export not exotism, not music with palm trees and etc., but we are going to do music in high level to export for the world. So Baden-Powell did that as Jobim, and I think they did that when they really assumed that slavery is an important part of Brazil.
Donc là, en fait, tu parles du manifeste anthropophage de Oswald de Andrade de 1928. Donc, où c'est une nouvelle conception et vraiment très originale pour penser l'affirmation d'une nationalité, au lieu de penser à des murs et d'une consolidation interne, le cas spécifique de l'histoire brésilienne fait qu'il n'y a pas de singularité interne, comme souvent on prend d'autres cas, il y a des civilisations antérieures à la colonisation, ou comme nous ici on va chercher chez les Gaulois avant, etc. Dans le cas du Brésil, tout est mélangé, confus, etc. Et donc, ils disent notre spécificité à nous, c'est justement de nous abreuver de toutes ces influences-là, de la capacité de faire l'anthropophagie, c'est-à-dire saisir les forces des guerriers qu'on affronte, pour ensuite ressortir ça, un produit typiquement national qui est lié de ce... Et donc qui est interprété aussi comme du métissage.
Yeah, it's very advanced for the period because...
Oui, en 1928, c'est peu probable de voir...
Yeah, all the intellectuals were trying to separate the foreign culture from the Brazilian culture, and he said, no, there's no separation. That's junction. We have to absorb. That's our strength. And also the strength... You can say now we are not... I don't know if I'm sounding very nationalist for you, but I'm not nationalist. I think it's a human procedure to be richer culturally. It's to absorb. Mm. You don't have to. If you deny, you lose.
Je voudrais rajouter un truc qui est très important pour comprendre ce qui se passe à ce moment-là, c'est qu'on sort de la Deuxième Guerre mondiale et de monde qui était régi par le principe de nation basée sur des races. Cela devient un tabou absolu, pour les raisons qu'on connaît. Et le Brésil est pris, notamment par l'UNESCO, comme un objet d'étude spécifique d'un endroit où le mélange des races se fait de façon harmonieuse. C'est la façon dont eux, ils posaient les choses. Et en fait, bon, c'est pas comme ça que ça marche non plus. Mais en fait, il y a un intérêt très particulier pour le Brésil, intellectuellement parlant, à la sortie de la guerre, parce que justement, il y a ces relations constitutives d'une société où il n'y a pas de frontières marquées explicitement. Et c'est ce qui fait un peu le succès, l'intérêt qu'on a pour le Brésil à la sortie de la guerre, et jusque évidemment jusqu'aux années 50-60.
Okay, let's go ahead. Oh, I'll jump that. It's just to show the influence of Moacir Santos on Baden-Powell music. Is another important guy for black music in Brazil.
On en parlera demain dans le détail. Donc, Moacir Santos. Yeah. On en parle demain en détail. Donc
yeah, I wrote my thesis about him, but it's too much. Let's go ahead. Okay, so we arrived in the last phases. We have Ginga. I choose Ginga. Ginga is not so famous, but he's really important between musicians in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro, where I came from. He's a guy from the suburbs. He's not a guy from the best parts of the city, and he's very tied to Choro tradition, but he's also an innovateur. He's also absorbing the most modern jazz and the most modern classical music, like Leo Brower, the great Cuban composer, is also in his music. And so I decided to pick him. And he's kind of, he's very, how can you say that? He's an intellectual of choro and of music. He's not intellectual of books, but he knows a lot about music. He's very specialized. He knows everything. I have been with him, and he knows everything about Baden-Powell, about João Pernambuco, about Villa-Lobos. And his music, you can see that. It's a very rich music.
C'est intéressant ce que tu dis. Donc, c'est que contrairement à ceux d'avant, qui étaient des gens avec des prétentions intellectuelles et d'ailleurs avec des formations universitaires très généralistes en architecture, en sciences sociales, etc., tous les Caetan, les Giu et tout ça, qui avaient donc une connaissance universitaire spécifique pour créer la musique brésilienne. Lui, il n'a pas une connaissance universitaire ou intellectuelle générale, mais parfaitement spécifique. C'est-à-dire que dans son champ, qui est le choro, qui est la musique instrumentale liée à la samba, plus ou moins, eh bien, il connaît tout dans ce domaine-là. Et donc, du coup, il devient un intellectuel de ces choses-là, mais sans aucune prétention généraliste.
Yeah, and this is the moment where the label Brazilian Popular Music, we call MPB in Brazil, it becomes to... It's not more popular with the people. It was not selling a lot as in the 70s and the 80s. So it becomes art now. It's not more... Oui. Popular music.
En faisant du terrain en région rurale au Brésil, vraiment des couches très 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 pauvres, j'ai découvert ce truc-là, c'est-à-dire que ce qu'on appelle MPB, musique populaire brésilienne, aujourd'hui, la réponse est ça c'est très élitiste, c'est quelque chose de vraiment, c'est pas pour nous. Et on m'a sorti cette expression-là, élitiste, pas pour nous, c'est quelque chose de la ville et des classes moyennes hautes.
Yeah, and in the 70s, when the cultural industry of LPs, albums, arised, we have the rock and roll stuff like Roberto Carlos and Jovem Guarda, and we have the MPB stuff like Chico Buarque and Caetano Veloso. In the 90s came a lot of other styles, like the pagode arises, which is a kind of popular samba, and it's very popular. And then the axé music, which is from Bahia. So before that, all music came from Rio and São Paulo, the centers in the south. And then in the 90s and 2000s, Bahia started to produce music for selling a lot in the entire country. Like, and then some the rural areas of São Paulo came the sertanejo, Chitãozinho, Chororó, and then after that came some phenomena from north, which is the brega from Pará, which is a song, which is a style which started completely out of cultural industry. Started in the dance players, the musicians start to sell CDs, and then it became really popular. And after that, of course, the majors. Companies took them to record.
And even after that comes the funk.
And the funk in my city, Rio de Janeiro, I live, I don't know if someone here know Rio de Janeiro, I live in Santa Teresa in front of a favela. And I listen funk a lot in my home. It's a very popular song made from people from the favelas, two people from the favelas, and they also start to do music out of the big cultural industry, and now they took them, and now we have Anitta, which is really popular even outside Brazil. So we are in that phase now. and here I'd like to talk a little about Gilberto Gil, was our Ministry of Culture. And is a very important guy who arrives with Caetano Veloso in the 60s, in the Tropicália. But he is a guy who deals very well with the cultural industry, trying to put high level information, not just in the lyrics, but in the music, with very interesting rhythms and very interesting ways to play the guitar. He's a songwriter. He's a guy who sings, but he's using the guitar in a very imaginative way. It's not just to some chords to put a voice over, but he's really thinking on the guitar how to play that.
C'est Gilberto Gil avec Caetano Veloso. Ils arrivent avec, donc ils commencent dans les années 60, mais ils continuent ce travail jusqu'à aujourd'hui de vraiment de pratiquer la culture commerciale, hein, parce qu'ils vivent du marché, mais de façon très réflexive, voire subversive, c'est-à-dire qu'ils acceptent, au lieu d'être dans une vision puriste de l'artiste, soit du peuple, soit du monde artistique, qu'il ne doit pas se compromettre avec le marché, ils disent non, nous, notre place, c'est là, c'est comme ça qu'on peut faire avancer des messages, et en même temps avec une vision très critique de leur propre pratique, mais ça apparaît dans la musique. Donc beaucoup de citations, beaucoup de références complexes, hein, vraiment à lecture multiple souvent.
Oui. So, Gilberto Gil came from Bahia, from Recôncavo Baiano. It's a part in the interior of Bahia, which is very tied to the Afro-Brazilian tradition, because the slavery there was big. And then there we have some rhythms which are really interesting for musicians. And I think it's interesting for everyone, but me as a guitar player, I'm really interested in that, and many people from my generation. So I'll show for you how Gil did that in Expresso 2222, the introduction. Maybe you know that it's like this. So here he's using a technique which some people say it's very common in Central Africa and also in ancient European music, which is use two fingers in one string. It's not very rational. You can, but it generates a rhythm. So he's using that, and over that he puts chords on top. He does that. So I used that to do an arrangement, and I'm going to finish now. I'll play a song by Edu Lobo, which is Corrupião. But before I play the song, I'll show you the harmony that Edu Lobo wrote and the melody. So the harmony is like that, four chords. Edu Lobo, just to explain, is a guy also from the Bossa Nova in the 60s. He's from Rio de Janeiro, but he was very good in writing music from northeast of Brazil. So he did that. But you can play that like Gilberto Gil would do, so. Then on top, we have the melody, which is. So I try to join both here for you. Thank you. Yeah, and here I put some important guitar players from the new generation that you can search and listen if you want. Marco Pereira, which was also my teacher and produced my first CD. Rafael Rabelo, which is died many years ago, but still very important. Paulo Bellinati, Ulysses Rocha, which is a teacher in Unicamp. Duo Saad, which are maybe the best guitar duo in the world. They are really amazing. Lula Galvão, Toninho Horta, Hélio Delmiro, and Diamandu Costa is a new guy, very young guy, and it's a genius. And here to the conclusion, I put the first slide just to back. So I showed the first recordings with João Pernambuco, and then we went to the Rádio Nacional and the Brasil in one voice in core, and then the diversification and the consolidation of the cultural industry in the 50s and 60s with Baden-Powell, and then Ginga to finish. I'd like to say thank you again. Thank for Vassili a lot.
Et merci à toi.
Merci, sorry about my English. I'd like to speak in Portuguese. It would be much better for me, but it's the way I find to express myself. Thank you very much.